Anywhere there's stranded energy or waste energy that's not able to make it to the market, I bring a market to the molecule.
What you're saying is that in practical reality, the way this actually works is you need a lot more flexibility than anyone pretends or probably even just realizes. It's like a normal Bitcoiner like myself, it doesn't work in this space.
Verified, sir.
Okay.
100%. You know, Bitcoin mining was never about guarantees. It was always about risk, you know? There's no guarantee you're hitting the block.
The clients you work with, are these folks like orange pilled, they're mining and then stacking those sats? Or is this like an expedience thing where they're like, hey, we've got this stranded energy? Like, who are these people?
I'm already the world leader in off-grid Bitcoin mining. Ha!
Hey everyone, Michael here with the Bitcoin Way podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Today on the show, I have HODL Tarantula. This guy is building off-grid Bitcoin mining rigs using stranded energy, Flare, all the things you've heard about, but he's actually doing it, decentralizing it. Very fascinating. So he gets a little bit technical about some of what it is that they do, how it all works. Try to zoom out, understand the bigger picture. We also get into more interesting topics at the end beyond just the operations of what he does. We talk about his business for sovereign hybrid compute, where you can go host your files, your photos, whatever it is that you have, an AI, instead of using something centralized like Amazon Web Services or any of those spyware applications that so many people use and rely on. And he has a great hot take at the end that I think will make all of you mad. So stay tuned for that as well. You will really enjoy this conversation. Hey everyone, like I said in the intro, I've got HODL Tarantula here. Tarantula, how you doing, my man?
Doing well. Thank you for asking, sir. Hope that you're having a blessed day.
Dude, thank you so much for joining the Bitcoin Way podcast. Let's jump right into it. So you're out in the field. I was going to ask you this offline, and I thought we'd just jump into the recording. Tell me a little bit about your background, and then I want you to explain what's going on around you.
Sure. So before I got into Bitcoin mining, I did automation, robotics, maintenance, and deployments with companies that do logistics and distribution. Mainly, I was involved with the food side of things, so it's like Amazon dry storage facilities, Kiva with the robotics, and Kroger Logistics. And so I, you know, have a firm understanding of three-phase power distribution, load balancing, chemicals, and also application of firmware to hardware, and basically the associated languages that are required to, you know, teach these pieces of equipment what to do, tell them what to do, how to do it, and when to do it. And so when I discovered Bitcoin and was getting further down that rabbit hole, I came to realize that this is something I can build, like from an infrastructure standpoint, and it wouldn't be difficult for me to do so, considering the education I had up until that point. And so it was just pretty much an easy fit for me when it came to Bitcoin mining. Like, it was just obvious to me that this is something I can do, no problems. Barrier to entry in regards to that education for myself was pretty much minimal to zero, none, because I already understood all the fundamental principles of the mechanisms of action required to make a Bitcoin mining operation work from the ground up successfully.
So what was there a learning curve on sort of ASIC, sort of the hardware when it came to Bitcoin specifically that you, or was that something you'd kind of been tinkering with in the background before you went full time?
Well, so I've always been an individual who's self-taught. I ended up unenrolling myself from high school via forged signatures, and then re-enrolled myself in a correspondence school and graduated a year ahead and a half ahead of my class. And so that being the case, I kind of run that way with everything in life. I don't ask permission. I just find out what needs to be done and I go and do it. And so essentially, when it comes to Bitcoin mining, just like with my introduction to automation and all that, I started purchasing hardware and equipment that was broken online and bringing it to myself and basically figuring out how to fix it from a zero state. And that, you know, kind of gives me an edge when it comes to the learning curve. You might think that it would make that learning curve a steeper or a more of an arduous journey, but contrary to that belief, having the ability to recognize patterns and acquire the knowledge on your own gives you the ability to kind of see things that are happening and recognize them and attain the fix or solution quicker than you might otherwise, having to go back and forth from a book or a PDF somewhere or a source online. Although, you know, it is the shoulders of giants which we stand upon today. And so that knowledge that was out there, I always try to touch base with first, because if you don't have a plan, you plan to fail, right? But in that, you know, keep that in the back of my mind and then just go apply it. Just go do the work. And doing that gave me the ability to learn much faster than I would have if I just kind of sat in the classroom and then later on tried to go put theory to, you know, bring that into fruition. So the learning curve, it varies for every person. But for myself, it wasn't too bad because I had exposure to a lot of the actual, hardware, itself, before I got into a position where I was kind of building out at any scale. It gave me a little bit of an edge on it.
Yeah, that makes sense. So tell me a little bit about what it is that you do. Tell me where you are, how this is different than most sort of mining operations that people tend to think of in their minds when they imagine, you know, hosted mining or self-mining or anything like that, solo mining.
Sure. Well, what we'll start with is where we are, and well, where I am at any given point could be anywhere. And that means that anywhere there's stranded energy or waste energy that's not able to make it to the market, I bring a market to the molecule. And so currently I'm building out in the Permian Basin. A few years back, I was building in the Bakken Reserve. And before that, out in Pennsylvania over by Marcellus Shale over that way. And what the mining operations in regards to what most people think of is big giant data center, football field size buildings and like a row of 50 transformers. And well, that's all great and good, but that's all very centralized too. And it's all very much, you know, dependent upon grid infrastructure and provisioning. And then you continuing to ask for permission in regards to having rates that allow you to operate on the network. Or negotiate those rates. And well, where we are is off grid. We are mining Bitcoin on currently, our focus is on flare gas and abandoned wells. Reason being is not just that we can create, you know, vertical integration behind the meter for, you know, control costs, but it's also the environmental impact that occurs is much greater as well. So, well, no pun intended. Gas well. So, what we have here is a deployment style that is mobile and modular in nature. We get 20-foot connex or 40-foot connex or even a 10-foot box. Depends on the size of the gas well and what the production is there. But the mining operation is nimble and small and easily deployable and easily movable. Anywhere from 250 kilowatts up to 1.2 megawatts and even maybe up to 2 if it's a hydro setup. There's more density in that. And one of the reasons why this is so beneficial is because when a gas well is flaring or you have anything like an abandoned resource like this, from the date of production in regards to its initial, day that they poked that hole in the ground, you have IP. And that initial production, it only lasts for about 24 to 36 months, and then you hit what's called a decline curve. And, well, what happens is you're going to either end up with a facility that is let's say if you want to do start out initial production, you might say that you have 5 megawatts of power available based on the capacity of the wellhead and its flow rate. But that's not forever guaranteed to stay 5 megawatts. And if your operation is built out in a modular fashion where you might have, let's say, 400 or 500 kilowatt containers, if let's say your maximum capacity is 2 megawatts on the wellhead site, and you're you now run that with, let's say, 300 kilowatt generators, as the well declines and your production rate falls, you can literally just peel off one of those containers and two of those generators, send it down to the next wellhead and get that going. And at the same time, you're not losing production on the current wellhead. Because normally what people try to do is they'll try to set one massive generator or turbine that will take up the whole 2.5 megawatt requirements for the project site. And those come with limitations now. You have to either have X amount of gas or more to run, or else you have nothing at all. It's basically an all or nothing operation at that point. And the way that I build and design in the off-grid world, it's very modular and nimble and scales down just as well as it scales up, which is more important than most people care to admit, because everybody just wants to talk about growth and scaling up. But what are you going to do in the meantime when you run into the decline on all the rest of your assets out there? Because if you've been doing this long enough, you know how the field works, and you can kind of guide these people, you know, into deployment methods and that will be successful long term versus watching them get cut off at the knees because now all of a sudden their production doesn't support the power generation requirements, etc. If that makes sense. So yeah. That was a lot for that question about off-grid and data center size and why, but I mean, the devil's in the details here, and that's why it works.
So are you're chasing clients in like the oil and gas industry?
Well, I don't chase clients anymore. They come to me and tell me what they want to build. And then I tell them whether or not it's a good idea and if maybe we should build it this way instead of that way, considering, you know, available resources, assets, locations, and everything else.
Yeah. So they've got operations probably in disparate places. So you can spin up this modular rig in one place, scale it down as you lose that capacity, and then
or up if like they want to punch a hole in the ground later on somewhere else and gather system it up into a pipeline, and we can increase the size of the system too. That's the other benefit.
Yeah, but then you can sort of take if you're scaling down, you can take that excess the hardware, everything that you need, to the next site and start building there. Yep. Okay, so is this
gotta be like water?
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. So when it comes to like in Bitcoin, like one of the early narratives I remember hearing about was the, you know, Flare, like these off-grid opportunities for mining Bitcoin. And in my mind, it was like, oh, this is just a forever source of power that, you know, you could just build this, to your point, you could build like this giant infrastructure and it would just kind of work forever. What you're saying is that in practical reality, the way this actually works is you need a lot more flexibility than anyone pretends or probably even just realize. It's like a normal Bitcoiner like myself, it doesn't work in this space.
Verified, sir.
Okay.
That's 100%.
It's interesting. And so ultimately, like to me, it feels like what you're doing is you're doing like the mining equivalent of purchasing the components to build your own node, to build your own self-custody setup. It's like,
you are essentially, because in order to do this out here, it's not like a traditional mining operation where, you know, it's all wrapped up in a little pretty package and you just stat your ASICs and forget it and walk away. You have to deal with everything yourself, from the provisioning of the chemical energy or the gas to the power generation to network engineering on the ASICs, load distribution, three-phase power in the containers for putting it on with. And then you have to deal with the managing the ASICs and everything else on site. A lot of people don't realize this, but you're out in the oil field. You're in the elements. It's raw out here, and it ain't fun when it comes to computers. And it's dusty. You got heavy iron content in the dust. So as soon as you get too much moisture in the air, if the ambient environment in the container itself isn't right, you might end up shorting your circuit boards just because they got too dusty and they got moist, and now you got, you know, conductive dust on your PCBs. And so it requires a daily boots on the ground commitment to actually make one of these operations be successful. Because you think about it, you're having, let's say, four different major trades that all have to operate perfectly together, synchronously to in synchronization to achieve one goal, which is mine the Bitcoin, right? So you have to have oil and gas stuff going your way, right? Flow, everything else has to be operating properly aside from that. And you have to have power generation, you know, electrical generation and distribution is not easy. That comes with its own set of problems. And then also with that, you have to be a mechanic too to deal with the generators and everything else that happens on that end. And you got the ASICs themselves and the network engineering, right? And dealing with all that, that's its own set of problems. And then also don't forget HVAC, because if you're going to keep them puppies purring and hashing cool, you got to make sure you're moving the hot air out properly and know how to deal with high, low pressure environments and what that's all about. So literally you got five major professional skill trades that have to all happen in one place all at the same time constantly in order for it to be successful, or else if any one of those things doesn't happen or has a problem, operation doesn't work. So
on average, are any one of those disciplines where you tend to find have the most problems, like the most troubleshooting, or is it just a mixed bag?
So
and depending on the problems, like what are the typical problems you're troubleshooting?
Okay, so it depends on the scale of the operation. First is where you're going to see a lot of these issues pop up, right? So if I have, for an example, a smaller deployment is probably going to have less networking issues and more power generation issues if the, depending on how they acquire the equipment, versus a larger deployment that already has, let's say, a bunch of tested out gens. So example is, I got a guy who has a large deployment and he got all his power generation contracted. And so it's clean, load tested, no issues. You throw all the ASICs out there and everything. Well, there's thousands of ASICs, and well, the guy was, you know, he's not a genius network engineer or anything. He had issues with getting them all to a pole, right? So we had to go in and we had to build his IP range and essentially, you know, configure all the switch gear to kind of outsmart old Mr. Elon Musk and Starlink, so we could kind of sneak all that stuff up on in there and onto the network. And then a smaller deployment. Let's say it's 250 ASICs on something under a megawatt. And, that gentleman, he went, tried to cut corners on power generation costs in the beginning, bought some used generators that people told him they were in great condition. And, we got them going, but then essentially, we didn't have any issues networking all the ASICs. The IP range was perfectly fine. We didn't have to do any magic there to make that happen, because we didn't have more than what we could handle in range and everything else. So that was pretty straightforward plug and play. But we ended up having power generation issues over the course of a couple weeks, because these gens, they hadn't been, you know, load tested properly, or else like they got rode hard and put away wet and sat for years. And then, you know, they said they were fine when they got put away, but downtime causes issues for generators. They don't like it. Generators like to stay running. And so, you know, with that operation, that was, one of the potential issues. Now, I mean, somebody who plans all this out and has been doing this for a long time can mitigate all these issues out the gate before they even happen in a lot of cases. But unfortunately, a lot of the guys that I end up working for, they have already purchased all their equipment because they had an engineering team or some group of guys put it all together on paper, and it looks great on paper, and it's like a go, and they get the approval, and then they go start buying all the equipment. And then all of a sudden, they realize, like, we got all this stuff now. It's time to put it out in the field and make it operate. Well, there's not a whole lot of guys out there like myself that actually do the physical operations, building, and deployment aspect of it. And so what happens is I come in at that point and I'm like, okay, well, this is all great in theory and works wonderfully on paper, but considering what the, you know, this and this about the site and the gas chromatography analysis and flow rates and that, like, these aren't even the right generators sometimes, or it's like, this is better suited for like a pipeline operation, and this is better suited for a flare gas operation. And so what I end up having to do is kind of like help them as best as I absolutely can with operational support and guiding them back into a place of, you know, operational, let's call it feasibility, right? Because it's easier to say, go and, you know, get a gas chromatography report and then source your generator for that gas than it is to just go buy cheap generators from somewhere and then force them to run on whatever gas you can manage to obtain. And so, like, more oftentimes than not, I've run into issues where, you know, those are the challenges in regards to the field and the people actually building. They just, unfortunately, and it's like this for everybody. So I don't get upset. I don't, you know, point fingers. I don't dismiss anybody or think less of anybody. I try to stay humble and just know that, you know, everybody is trying to do the best they can with the knowledge they have, but understand that they don't know what they don't know. And by that, I mean, things in the field you will never see in a book or on paper, just because that's not how it works out here, are going to happen. And until you see that, you can't know. And so that's where I try to shine and be the best I can be for my clients, is by trying to head off things before they happen and say, yeah, well, you know, I dealt with this before over here, I dealt with this over there, and this is, you know, what we're going to see if we don't get a handle on it now, or this or that. And so essentially, it's, you know, preferable if I can get brought on from the beginning of the project, you know, and line things out. But, you know, a lot of times it's, you know, guys are already building something and they're at the sticking point, or they're wanting to make sure that it goes together as best as it possibly can. And, well, fortunately for me, I've been smart enough to protect my reputation in this industry. And, you know, I'm the guy they call when they want to put on. So, yeah, that's where it is.
That's awesome. Besides the ASICs, are the component parts to create any of these operations relatively generic? Like, the you're not having to like get a lot of custom, like the generators are generators you can buy, you know, off the shelf, so to speak, anything else. It's just a matter of configuring it properly according to
manufacturer specifications. Correct. Yeah. So that's a very astute observation in regards to the, you know, overall requirements in regards to specialty equipment. The only real specialty piece of equipment is the ASIC itself. I mean, unless you have a hybrid system where you need a special type of transformer to protect certain things on your electrical system, a lot of times it's generic. You know, they got the transformers are nothing special. It's just like a step down transformer. It might be a 480 277 delta, needs to be step down configuration to 415 240 Y, And then those are, you know, already in production, a standard for industrial equipment, you know, all over the world. Your conductors and cabling, and that's pretty standard. It's just sizing the service to the current that's going to be passing through, right? And then generators are generators, right? It's just that I advise people to get your gas chromatography report and match your generator to that, because in regards to specialty equipment, I would say that yes, your generator for out here should be continuous duty prime, which and should be on the fuel system rated for the BTU on gas. So like if you got, let's say, 1300 BTU gas, you're probably going to want to run something that's a rich burn, low RPM, like a Waukesha, or even like if you have to go at a higher RPM, like a PSI engine, go, you know, get like a high power or something like that. They have a fuel system that can handle the raw wellhead gas in real time and make the adjustments on the timing of the engine to keep it going instead of causing you problems. Whereas, and in that case, that would be a generator specially for wellhead gas, right? Whereas if you were to take like a standby, like a Kohler 400 standby generator and try to put it out here like that, and you're running raw wellhead gas into it, you're probably going to have detonation issues. The cylinder heads are going to get hot. The thing is, it's not going to like it, and you're going to end up spending a lot more money on maintenance and having downtime dealing with the generator because you're trying to push gas through it that it just wasn't built to run. Whereas something like that is going to be better suited for clean pipeline gas, because usually places where standby generators are operating like that, it's either diesel or they have a pipeline available that they can supplement the fuel to the generator on. And in that, those generators are tuned to run that clean, low BTU, 950,000 BTU gas. And they just can't take the other stuff that we bring from out here in the oil field. And so little tiny things like that, you might say, can be specialty oriented, right? But I mean, technically, I mean, yeah, it is kind of generic in regards to a lot of the other parts.
Okay, that makes sense. So let's zoom out for a minute. So the clients you work with, are these folks like orange pilled, they're mining and then stacking those sats, taking self-custody? Or is this like an expedience thing where they're like, hey, we've got this stranded energy. I have a friend who started mining Bitcoin just to make some extra cash on the side. And he has this guy, you know, Tarantula, who can come in and help us get this set up. Like, who are these people?
So, first of all, who these people are really isn't anybody's business. One,
I don't mean literally. I mean, like, what's the nature of their
Bitcoin? Two, what they're doing with their Bitcoin or stacking or wherever is going is also nobody's business. And three, the average person that reaches out to me is private equity.
Okay.
Because like I made it quite clear that I don't build for pubcos. They do not have the best interest of the Bitcoin ethos and like network in mind. I don't believe. I think all they care about is Wall Street, keeping Wall Street happy, and what is good for Wall Street and their shareholder stock price. And I think that if a decision came across the table that said like we're gonna do this, it will like send our share price to the moon, but it's not good for Bitcoin. I don't think that they would give a rat's backside about Bitcoin. They would take the option that just puts their shareholders' price to the moon. And so right. I've seen things like that happen already. Just like an example is we had a pubco try to do OFAC compliant blocks only, and they were going to set a standard for that. And then what? Now everybody else is going to have to conform to you because you cucked up and went, you know, all fed soy boy and like got soft and decided that you're going to just bend the knee and play this game. Well, you can piss off with that. I will never build for anybody like that ever. And I advise them to walk away from me, because it's like Bitcoin doesn't care. It's going to keep going with or without you. Whatever these people writing the policies say or do, it's going to keep going. It doesn't matter. And that's how we're going to build it, too. And so the guys who approach me to build and I'm building for, they're of the like mindset. They're freedom maximalists, sovereign maximalists. You know, they understand the future, what it's hitting for. They know how to be successful. It comes with controlling your cost behind the meter and being in a position to just build, 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 and not get stuck in the lane when you're just dealing with bureaucratic bullshit nightmares and red tape and everything else. Because we don't have none of that out here. We operate in a lean, mean, hard-hitting, fighting machine fashion. And so those are the guys that reach out to me to build. It's guys that can do, you know, let's say a couple megawatts and they're ready to do more. Or else it's a producer who has an idea. He's heard about this. He wants to supply gas. And then now it's up to me to maybe go find some equipment and put it on and make it happen, right? Yeah. And, you know, that's basically the majority of my clients. And I also do consulting work with people as well. So, I mean, there's an army of Bitcoin mining plebs out there that are my guys, that those are the guys I love and support, that they're trying everything they can to make things happen and operationally for themselves. Like, you know, I love the homies out there. We see them with their mining setups at home where they're offsetting the cost of heating their house with the ASICs. Like, man, I was doing that back in 2018 myself, you know, heating the house with miners, rebuilding my HVAC system and ducting in ASICs and stuff. And then now we got guys running hot water heaters and heating their driveways in a winter and doing all kinds of other stuff with ASICs through hydro and other systems. It's absolutely amazing, but it's so hard for those guys because they are, you know, they're bleeding orange themselves trying to make it happen and fighting the meter itself, you know, the power bill from the grid. And so they're doing everything they can. You know, I get consults with guys like that where I try to help them understand how they can do supplemental renewable to offset their power cost. Maybe they got some space on the roof for some solar. They got, maybe they're in a good area to toss up little 5 kilowatt wind turbine or something, or maybe they have access to a nice, you know, water feature on a property where we can develop some drop and fall, and now we can have a little micro mini hydro turbine set up. Just anything I can do to help my guys offset the cost at the meter and keep them hashing at home. That is like one of my most favorite things to do. And so, like, that's pretty much the range of the clients that I deal with. It's like all the guys, private equity, trying to just break off and do it wild horse sovereign style, or just like the pleb miners who are right at the precipice of, am I going to be able to do this at any scale? Or is it like, is this where I'm at with this? And how can I make this operation better in long term, right?
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, I think you answered the question I was trying to ask. I mean, the people you're working with are Bitcoiners, they're sovereign maxis, those types of folks.
Yeah, they're hard. I have a little bit of a vetting process. Like, I ask guys, you're going to come out in the field with me, right? And we're going to look at some stuff, because if you think that this is just plug in this and turn on that and walk away, well, sir, you're in for a rude awakening. Like, don't even try to put your head down on that pillow at night, because we're going to fight.
So I don't know, like, if your goal is for you to scale this into like the bit, you know, the, like, you're the world leader in off-grid Bitcoin mining, or if this is just like, hey, I've got my sort of lane that I swim in and I'm really good at it and I focus on this and that.
Or explain something to you about that, sir. I'm already the world leader in off-grid Bitcoin mining.
Okay, so do you think though your operation, do you view it as something scaling to like that tens of thousands more sites, or do you think that that it's going to be decentralized way that this operates?
Yes. So for me personally, and my corporation that my team, my co-founder Dimi and my guys Logan, Jose, and Umar, we are together. We have a business called Sovereign Hybrid Compute, right? Mm-hmm. And that business I am personally looking to see scale indefinitely, because what it does is not only does it decentralize the mining from the grid and keep it pushing forward in new frontiers off grid, but also we're operating hybrid compute systems. So we're also doing data storage, cloud compute infrastructure that's privacy focused and oriented, paid for in Bitcoin, VPN, VPS services, etc. We're also working on building out a division that can support essentially unchained artificial intelligence. You'll be able to run your own instances and just kind of have no training wheels to worry about dealing with. And now that is so important. I can't even begin to explain to you how important it is that people have data sovereignty. They're not locked into vendors like AWS, Google, Azure, and all those guys. And what we're doing is sovereign hybrid compute that gives, people control of their data again in regards to cloud compute solutions, VPS, VPN services, and other things that I've just mentioned. It's a little different than the way things are kind of going right now. Like when US One East Amazon AWS has a hiccup and a third of the entire internet is like fucking gone off the face of the earth, that's a problem, sir. Like, that's a huge problem. That is centralization to its core and more. And them guys will at the same time data scrape and steal everything they can from you and sell it to somebody else to spite you and make money off you at the same time while they're doing it. We ain't going to allow that to continue, my man. The sovereign hybrid compute, we're taking all of their solutions, spinning it back on them, allowing people to own them outright if they choose to, or we'll provide the infrastructure for them and run it, and they can pay for it in Bitcoin as long as they want. And in regards to setting up their account, I don't care if they type in Daffy Duck or Mickey Mouse, because I don't have to worry about chasing them. Our settlements happen in Bitcoin. It's final. And so we don't have to deal with the fraud, which means we can offer these services for cheaper, better, quicker, more efficiently, and provide better services because it's decentralized as well. We'll have hub and spoke buildouts in a fashion that creates safety failovers that are basically equivalent to a RAID 5. It's auto backup, baby. Let's go. Just go.
So like a company like Start9, you can buy one of their devices.
That's one of the people that we're working with.
So like you can have your own node connected to your router at home. And if you lose internet access or something like that, not the end of the world, or maybe you've got a backup or something. But what you're suggesting here is you have the ability, like because of the nature of the way you structure this, you have high availability for like the critical resources that you need access to file storage. If you want like a private, LLM that you want to run, if you've got other resources that you want to run instead of an AWS, go to someone like you. Is that a good way of framing it?
100%, my guy. Okay. Very, very well said.
And this is already live and operational?
Yes.
Okay. So how do you, I don't want you to divulge anything, not that you would, but anything that you don't want to share. How do you think about redundancy? Is it multiple sites, different geographical locations,
yep,
multiple energy sources?
All the above.
Okay.
Yep. We're breaking off into other continents now at this point. We have already, it's already beyond the point of conversation now. A university over in the continent of Africa, I'm not going to say exactly which, but they want us to build their infrastructure and provide them with data sovereignty in regards to the educational institution itself. They want to mine Bitcoin and are going to allow us to build out, manage, and run the operations themselves and ourselves, as well as train them to have guys to do it on site so that it can, long-term be viable for them indefinitely. And they want us to build out the sovereign hybrid compute style system at the same time. So yeah, in regards to the words you were just saying about redundancies, we just broke into another continent on locations geographically too now.
Do you have like a white glove service where if someone came to you and was like, hey, I want to start, you know, migrate. I want this level of sovereignty over my data, over, you know, any sort of new thing that I spin up, that you guys have someone who's like, hey, but they're like, I don't know how to do this, what to do. Like, can you guys like walk me through this? Or is it kind of more of a, you know, hey, we spin up the infrastructure and you've got to, you know, make use of it.
So we have the ability to help clients and guide them and you know, do that. But basically our infrastructure is set up so that you go to the website and you scroll through, you pick your services that you want, and then it's already built automatically and deployed on the back end, and then you just get an access point. And then from that point going forward, you know, if it's like they just need to migrate their data over from another place or something like that, you know, we have the ability to assist and to provide them with, you know, help to make sure that they don't get totally wrecked in the process.
Okay, dude, that's awesome.
We haven't actually put out like a an official point of sale tab where, you know, like, buy 6 hours of, you know, white gloves, the services like this. But I mean, we want to provide you with the best customer service and experience when you utilize our services. So, you know, you go through, you run through and you buy everything. You know, if you're having a hard time using it, you know, we are happy to help you because, you know, your success is our success.
Awesome. Okay, let's briefly zoom out on mining. I think you've talked before, at least online, about mining's pool centralization, some concerns. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. And then to what degree then you advise clients toward particular pools, or are that, you know, do you advise solo mining? Like what do you, how do you approach that with clients?
So with my clients, in regards to recommendations for the pool or, you know, telling them what to do, I really am not a fan of anybody ever trying to tell me what to do ever. And so what I do is I educate my clients on every aspect of what's going on here and then help them to make an educated decision on what's going to be the best for them operationally. So if I have a client who, you know, has millions of dollars of infrastructure deployed and they have people that are, you know, on the payroll and everything else, they're going to need consistent payouts, right? And so I might advise them to start at an FPPS pool so that, you know, they can have that consistent payout from the pool to be able to manage the operation and everything, right? Now, if it's a client that is, say, has done a deployment that's like a little bit on the smaller side, might still be $1.5 to $2 million deployment, but it might not have the same amount of overhead. They might be able, it might be financed directly by them and not have any debt servicing requirements. And so they may be in a better position to keep the lights on temporarily while they mine to a pool like Ocean, where the payout comes per share based on when the block reward is hit, right? And so it's more or less based on the operational structure of the site and how the client needs to disperse the funds, you know, in general to keep things going. Like, what are the risks here? You know, we have to weigh all these things out to, you know, say that whether or not doing it this way is going to be better than that way necessarily. Yeah. I can say the data is there and it's proven that, you know, the guys who are mining FPPS are, they're getting shafted. I mean, you look at the numbers, Bob Burnett, that's one of my favorite guys out there. He always puts pen to paper and runs the numbers before he does anything. He literally did the test and ran the same ASIC sets on an FPPS pool and Ocean, and the rewards paid out better from Ocean every time. And so, I mean, I advise people that if you can afford to do it, go that way and mine to a pool like Ocean, or build your own, you know, mining node and launch. And like, if you have enough hash rate, literally you have enough hash rate to you know, hit the block, run your own solo pool, you know, like, let's go. This is what this is about. You know, Bitcoin mining was never about guarantees. It was always about risk, you know. There's no guarantee you're hitting block. Pools give people the advantage of having that security. But at the same time, it comes at the cost of decentralization, is from what we're seeing now, right? And so, you know, until we can get more people who are out there that are able to get in a position to take the risk, you know, a lot of them are going to have to stick with certain types of situations that aren't necessarily favorable or the best long term for our network. But I believe in like what the guys at Ocean are doing, and you know, I appreciate stuff like that. I know that there's going to be more in the future. More people are going to build out we call it implementations that give people the ability to, you know, build their own block templates and do things like that. And long term, I feel like that as long as people keep making strides and moving forward, that, you know, we'll get away from all of this madness that we're seeing with these proxy pools and everything. But it's going to take some time, you know. And it's not going to be an overnight thing. But the network itself, interestingly enough, we've seen it in the past where a pool acquires anywhere more than 50% of the hash rate. The actual miners on that pool themselves, we've seen make mass exoduses from that pool and go to another one. Literally, they did it without being prompted or told to by anybody, because they knew that it was going to be a problem if it did happen. Yeah. And so that's one of the things that is beautiful about this network. You know, it kind of self-corrects sometimes when it comes to course, you know, even the people can surprise you occasionally.
the thing that would concern me, because I've heard that before. There was it was a different cohort though, historically, who was mining, and they felt that conviction to go move to another pool. What would concern me is that we have actors in the space moving forward, you know, big public companies, for example, who don't have quite the incentive, or maybe there's an effort to centralize the mining at the pool level. Is that something you think about or not concerned?
So I don't have concern about it from the perspective of like necessarily a direct network attack, because you have to think that you have to understand that if you're going to do that, you're basically foot gunning yourself. You know, you do this, you just compromise the value of this asset now for your own gain. And at the same time, doing that's going to drive the value of that asset down, you know? And so you want to shoot yourself in the foot now or later is the question.
It still requires that outlay of capital up front.
Correct.
I think that makes sense.
So here's the other thing. The other thing, aside from the capital expenditure requirements, or how long could they necessarily like control that? Because how much is it going to cost to run hash like that, right? That's one of the reasons why, for me, kind of it's like a non-starter. But what is concerning is that these are, in my opinion, the bottleneck and Achilles heel when it comes to legislation for the network. Like, if you have, let's say, multiple major entities that are controlling X amount of the hash rate in the pools, right, or hold this X amount of percentage in the pool, what is the likelihood, you know, that the other pools are proxies for them? And now if they get, you know, if it's boot on neck time from a legislation standpoint, they roll, the proxy pools are rolling right along with them. And so that's where it's more concerning for myself, is like from a legislation standpoint, that's where they, I feel like, would try to hit the hammer, like drop the hammer. And so Well, that's the other reason why I like building off grid and running, you know, infrastructure that is separated from the mainstream. So we have pools like Ocean and other guys like myself that will be willing to spin up a mining node and try to accumulate hash and just mine the Bitcoin directly from the Coinbase itself off the network instead of trying to go through a pool. And that's where legislation doesn't matter. Like they can pull whatever legislation they want on a pool operator. But if you're an anonymous pool running behind Tor and you're operating in a circular Bitcoin economy, well, good luck with your paperwork and your documents, homie, because Bitcoin don't give a fuck.
Yeah. I love that, man. Well, hey, in the interest of letting you get back to your day, I know you got a lot of work to get done. Let's just head to the last question here.
Do you have any more in between?
Well, you talked about, I mean, one of the things I wanted to hear about was the sovereign hybrid compute. I think that's an incredible service, and I think you did a really good job of framing that. I'm gonna look into that personally for some purposes. So yeah, I may be in touch with you on that as well. But I think you covered a lot. I could talk to someone like you all day, but maybe we just need to have you back on at another point in time, and we could spend more time on sovereign hybrid compute in the future. But I'm excited to hear your unpopular opinion, and you get bonus points if you offend some Bitcoiners with it.
Unpopular opinion here. Let's put it towards the whole core knots thing. How's that?
Okay.
That'll ruffle some feathers or short some skirts out there.
Let's hear it.
So the people that are screaming core no more, and the people that are over there screaming the knots or Nazis, etc., they really need to go look in the mirror and stop screaming at each other, because they're kind of just screaming at themselves. Because this Bitcoin itself, like what it is, the code and how it's operating, it is operating exactly as it was intended to operate. Open sourced and in a manner where anybody can take it, do whatever they want to it, and then redeploy their own and build off of it, right? And that's exactly what's happening in both sides. And the thing is one side saying that you're not building it the way you're supposed to be building it, and the other side saying the same thing back. And it's like, you know, you guys are both saying the same thing to each other. It's just the message is different on the other end. And that thing that they're saying is that we don't like freedom of speech and code, because otherwise we wouldn't be saying nothing to you about what you're building. We just let you build and let bygones be bygones. But that's not what's happening. People are at each other's necks crying about this and that and their morals and their ideology and their principles. And like, you're not letting me do this. And like, I don't want to do that. Well, dude, nobody's going to stop your stupid JPEGs from getting into a block. You know, there's other people out there that are mining a block. There's other nodes that aren't Knots nodes. Like, I think it's a lot of it and an unpopular opinion. Here's the unpopular opinion part. A lot of the people out there right now yelling and screaming about it don't necessarily even understand any of the mechanisms of action behind how it works. They're literally just doing it because it gets them attention.
Yeah.
Puts eyes on them, validates whatever their thoughts or beliefs are and everything else, because like the guys who are running and trying the gun and use it as a data file storage situation, they can still do that right now.
Yeah.
And the guys who don't want it to operate like that, well, they can operate an Knots node if they want to and do that. So it's like, it's working just as it's intended to. And it's not going to stop. And I'm going to keep building the mining infrastructure. They're going to keep crying about, he said this, she said that. This ain't what it's supposed to be. That's what it's supposed to be. And I think that they're all just looking for attention. Otherwise, they'd be doing it behind closed doors somewhere else. Yeah, we're in an email thread back and forth, you know.
All right. So I think this is a risky follow up. Then, what implementation are you running on your node?
So, I got a I have an updated past version 29 on my core. I also have Knots nodes too. So,
yeah, you're you can claim that position because you are truly impartial on this one, but
I am, and like I'm gonna build the supporting infrastructure no matter what, so
yeah,
I just like have fun watching all my little nerd fun homie dev homies you know, beat the brakes off each other verbally, because I like seeing, man, I beat the brakes off of them physically out here in the field.
Awesome. Tarantula, man, you're awesome. Really appreciate you taking some time. Hey, tell people where they can find you, learn more about Sovereign Hybrid Compute, and anything else you want to share with them.
Yeah, man, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to shamelessly plug my stuff. Although, you know, when it's an integrity-built operation that's driven from straight source and truth, ain't no shame necessary. So anyone wants to find me, I'll be building and sharing what I build on Twitter at Hoddle Tarantula, and then sovereignhybridcompute.com is a site, all one big fancy word. if you don't want to type all that in though to your URL, you can always find a link to Sovereign Hybrid Compute on my Twitter profile.
Perfect. Awesome. Tarantula, thanks so much for the time, man. We'll stay in touch.
Appreciate you, Michael. Thanks for your patience and everything from before. Like I said, when we first started going down this path, that I'm not an easy guy to nail down. And like you found that out. So hey, appreciate your patience.
All good, man. Glad we found the time, brother. Take care.
Right on, man. Stay hard, brother.
Cheers. And that's a wrap again. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Hoddle Tarantula. I know I did. Love that guy. And really, really, truly appreciate what he's doing. So much more for the Bitcoin network than all the Suitcoiners and people you hear way, way, way too much about. Go check out his business. Go follow him on X. He's such a funny and fascinating guy to pay attention to, follow along with. And of course, if you need help taking your Bitcoin into proper 100% self-custody, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. You can schedule a free 30-minute consult with a member of our team. We also help with online privacy, setting up privacy phones. We can help you with a Plan B residency option in Panama. Such an awesome opportunity. And as the world descends into chaos and tyranny, you're going to want that. Again, it's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Do me a favor, if you're enjoying the channel, give us a like, subscribe, comment, something to feed the algorithm, share it with a friend, family member, loved one who you think might be interested in it. We'd really appreciate anything you can do to support us. And until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.